Hey everyone, it's Angela with the podcast Refocus with Angela Stevens. And you're going to love this guest. I've had such a blast already talking to him in 10 minutes. I could talk to him all day long. His name is Dr. Jack Maple. He is unbelievably intelligent in so many ways. You're going to find this out. But he is actually a holistic pediatric consultant. He works with students and residents, staff at Children's Hospital, Boston. He's got a lot of background, but actually I want to tell you, he has been an assistant professor of pediatrics at Boston University. He works in primary care at the Comprehensive Care Clinic for Children in Boston. He was trained at Yale Medical School. He completed his residency and chief residency at the Boston Combined Residency in Pediatrics at the Boston Medical Center and Children's Hospital, Boston. He lives in Newton, Massachusetts with his wife and two children. And I'm not going to say what else he does because it's so cool. So did I miss anything? Because believe me, there you do a lot of things.
Yeah, I think I can give you a little updates. But first of all, I really just came here for the really kind words and thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I've moved on from children's. I'm now focused really uniquely at here at Boston Medical Center and Boston University. But a shout out to my friends over at Children's. And I'm very excited to be here today and looking forward to our discussion. Thank you.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, first of all, it's interesting. We were talking before, and I want to talk to you a lot about primary care. But in general, you've worked with children. What ages have you primarily worked with?
We work with kids from really 0 to 21 and even a little older, including young adults with special needs who may need help transitioning into adult care.
Got it. So I have a question. What are kids struggling with today?
Well, how much time do you have? So I think it's a very different world than it was 4 years ago. I think coming out of the pandemic, we are seeing some disease patterns like the typical routine diseases of childhood are kind of settling back into normal since COVID has stopped flooding the zone. But we are seeing a transformed landscape in terms of behavioral and mental health. There's a ton more anxiety and depression, sadly, amongst our children and teens that has been rising over time, but has dramatically increased in recent years. And so that's made our lives a bit more complicated as we've seen disconnection and loss of services for a lot of those kids. And so nationally, it's a problem we're all struggling with,
right,
families included.
Right. And I would just say, if you're listening to this and you have a child or know a student that needs help, there's nothing wrong with getting counseling. I got counseling for my son. I needed it when I went through my divorce. It's a step to help you get to the next step in your life. So I would definitely compliment that. So talk to us about, I have so many questions, but when you're talking about the NICU and small kids, when you have parents that are going through that, that's a stressful time for parents, right?
Sure.
What can others do to help those families in need at that time? Because I think we don't know what's going through the parent's mind at the time, right? When they've got their world has been shattered if they've got a child in the hospital or an infant. But for people who care about them, what can they do to help, if anything?
I can definitely tell you that's a perspective I've had that's been shaped by my own role as a parent and as a pediatrician with experience. I think appreciating that for all of us who have had loved ones who are ill, including kids or parents or relatives, I think those families who are in that weird bubble of illness exists in a different dimension than the rest of the world. They can come out into a world where there are stores open and people are going and to and from work and things are happening, but they're like in a hospital or they're having conversations in conference rooms in hushed tones about grave news or concerning developments. And I think the biggest thing we can do for those folks is just be there in the way that seems best. Offering help is always welcome, I find. Parents, I think, often don't resent that at all. And I understand people may feel that people may want their privacy. So I think that the usual things that have been done over centuries that, where we see in communities of faith, for example, people come together and offer things like meal trains and make some casseroles or help with things that might otherwise complicate their already burdened lives, like getting kids to school or helping with carpooling, for example, may be a little thing that goes a long way in unloading the stresses they might feel even more. So that's a place to start. And asking them,
right,
is a place to begin.
I love that. I just thought, you know, our passion is helping people on this podcast and in my company. And so I appreciate that. So secondly, you know, you've worked with kids, you're working in primary care now. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So a lot of people don't like to go to the doctor. They're afraid of the doctor. You know, I've even known people that have been dismissed from the doctor. And it's very, very intimidating sometimes. But why, first of all, why should you go to the doctor when you're having, whether it be mental illness or a physical illness?
Well, you should always go to the pediatrician because we have the best stickers, but that's just a whole other thing. But in terms of answering your question seriously, I think, you know, it's a big question with potentially big consequences. And listen, I think like we, as we were discussing earlier, people may have limited resources, which might make going to the doctor complicated, that there may be concerns about debt or concerns about getting involved in something that they can't, like literally they feel they can't afford. If assuming and hoping for a minute that people are able to access some insurance or find a way there, my hope would be that people can establish a relationship with a team or a provider who will come to know them and their circumstances, because I think that informs better problem solving, becomes a way to sort of leverage a smarter use of time and to prevent badness, honestly, that sometimes little things can become big complications, like not getting your endoscopy after the age of 50 or whatever, like could lead to colon cancer, and early detection can prevent lethal outcomes. So long way of saying it's a way of not fragmenting your care, but having it all under one place and giving that you and that provider that knowledge to manage your goals and to set goals together so you can understand what your priorities are and then treat them accordingly.
Awesome. So this is a unique question, but I'm very, very curious because I've been wanting to have a physician on here to ask this. But when you have a patient that comes into you and they don't want to take your care, they don't want to follow your instructions. I don't know if that's happened to you. For two questions, how do you handle that? Number one, and then how does a family handle a family member that doesn't want to care for themselves?
Let's take the first one first. I think, and then you can, I'll probably forget about the second one so you can remind me, but I think like, so plenty of times in medicine, for example, people are not necessarily excited about, for example, medicine or medicines that we might offer. And so I think it's a matter of question of like of importance and seriousness. Like if someone says someone has a pimple and I say like, I have a lotion that could help you with that. And they say like, I don't like lotions. I'll say like, okay. But if someone says I have seizures, but I have to go drive my kid to school, I might say like, that needs to be treated for that to be safe. And so that's a different issue where there may be a safety or well-being concern for that person or people they care for. And that may meter or impact the urgency and the tempo and the measure of responses we offer and the conversation. But it's always coming from a place of partnership where, you know, like we're not the boss. They're coming to us for help. And so we need to listen, we need to understand. And then if there are insights we can have to arrive at a good place, I think that's a really important message for primary care, is that there's often many good routes to the same good outcome. And whatever I might prefer may not be the best solution for somebody. So I think it begins with understanding and then moves towards something that is hopefully, like we said before, a shared goal setting. And if it's not, then we, you know, if we have to, we escalate it, but not without trying to explore options first and engaging somebody.
Right. And when you talk about seizures, you're right. They can have an accident and not realize it. So, you know, especially if you have a family member, you hear those words, you know, take note. So yes. And then my next question was, if you have a family member that doesn't want to, or that cannot get their family member to take care of themselves and to come see the doctor.
And that again is, you know, there are certainly limits for people who are adults of adult age, where they can make independent decisions and decide to engage or not engage in a program or in medication and so forth. Like we can't necessarily compel them to do all things as is appropriate. It's a little different with children, right? And yes. When there may be issues where I might have a different perspective from a parent, again, not walking in the door with a preformed idea, but coming from a frame of understanding and learning and listening, and then perhaps consulting with colleagues before we necessarily, you know, intervene or move to perhaps, you know, bring in an authority, for example. But I think it's, and it may, so certain things you can tolerate. So if someone doesn't want to, like we said before, they don't want to treat their eczema or they don't want to get braces, okay, that's your choice. But if someone has diabetes and we know that their sugar is in a dangerous place and that could pose a lethal threat to them, we may need to negotiate or feeling that escalate things to get them treatment, life-saving treatment that they may need.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really good. So let's talk about you for a minute. Let's talk about focusing. So, sure. You know, I'm sure every day you don't come in completely focused on target. You certainly may have stresses. I know you have kids at home as well. So, sure. And that's, you know, can be stressful at times too, for them and for us. But how do you handle your day when you are not focused and you know you've got a list of patients you've got to see that day, but you're not there? What do you do? What do you do to get yourself focused for those people?
Sure. I think I found that primary care is a lot like, in my mind, at least, it's sort of like improv, and it's kind of like stand up in the sense that you're on and that you're not a persona, but you are sort of really need to put forward your best sort of skills and sharpness and senses to really be a good receptor of information and to be a high performing and engaging sort of participant. So to get there every day, I don't have a green room, but instead I will do a few things before and after work to kind of really stay in the game. So in the mornings, I get out, I go outside. And so I run, I'll walk or hike with the dog, or I go on some canoe rides in the early morning hours in season. And then after work, I find part of my like kind of come down from a day where there might have been a lot of intensity, I'll certainly spend time with my spouse and my family members. And then, you know, find a comfortable space on the couch, open up an iPad and draw, which is a way I also, creativity is a good outlet for me to work through stress or demons. And that comes through in cartooning that I do.
So let's talk about that, because I feel this. I'm a theater major too. I had two majors. And so I get that theater side of you. So you are a cartoonist. And so yes, I want you to email me some of those. We'll put those up for some people. I think they'd enjoy this. So first of all, I'm going to talk about how old we are here for a minute. You remember the commercials that would come out and say, if you can draw this Donald Duck or whatever, you could be this major artist, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you did that, but my point is, first of all, how did that come into play? Because you use that with your patients too.
Every day. So I think, cartooning was something my mom did, and I grew up imitating her and developed my own style that was informed by comics and things like Mad Magazine growing up in the silly cartoons there that I still love. But I found in my journey into adulthood that like it was a really interesting way as a young adult to meet new people or to sort of capture things on the fly, and was a nice diversion to bring a sketchbook wherever I went. And hospitals have lots of pens and papers, and so as a medical student, it was a way to engage with my teams and also to reflect and process sometimes the absurdity and the intensity of healthcare, where people die or they're upset. Or there's just crazy things like we have this amazing MRI machine and it depends on a fax machine to communicate the report into state-of-the-art other hospitals. Like that's the crazy world we live in, and you just can't let that go by without comment. So I find it is diverting. It's a great tool. And for kids who are nervous, it can be a great icebreaker. I'll walk in and I'll often say to a five-year-old, like, hey, what's your favorite animal? And you can learn a lot about a kid by their choice. I love puppies or kittens, or I like unicorns, or I like a rhino. And then occasionally you get something interesting like a tiger shark or something very specific. So I can draw something pretty quickly, and then they've got a little memento, and we're off to the races because they're no longer worried about getting the flu shot.
I wish you had been my son's pediatrician. That sounds great. I want to actually on that note. For people that are pediatricians and even primary care and specialists,
sure.
Sometimes I feel they forget why they got into this, right? And so, you know, with healthcare and all the other things, sometimes they forget why they chose to be a physician, right? So you sure. Do cartooning. Any suggestions for any other, we have physicians that listen to this, any other ideas about how they can relate to their patients? Because I think that's a great idea.
Absolutely. You know, I think, if I were to say anything to maybe restate that, but to address the idea here is I think like let your creative flag fly, you know, like whatever that might be, if it's acting, if it's making jewelry, if it's writing, I think like finding a way to embrace your creativity is a way to stay whole to me. And then I think sharing that in some way that's not shamelessly self-promotional, but is a way of connecting with patients, or even coaching or mentoring or suggesting to other young or other patients you may identify who have a creative bent. Like, that's a wonderful community. It's also a great way to sort of reach out to them and maybe see them in a way that will transform their perception of you as a human as well as a medical professional.
Love that. So the other thing I wanted to ask you too is for schools. So in the school season, you've got kids that are going back to school, and there's tons of issues, anxiety, sure, and loneliness and not fitting in. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, how all of us can help our kids, right? Whether you're a parent or in the school system, if you're a teacher or a counselor, you know, the kids that are struggling right now with, you know, whether they have ADHD or mm-hmm. autism or whatever that might be, what can we do to make their life better, to help them, to get them included, or any ideas like that? Because I think sometimes we just, we think that, you know, everyone should just, you know, they should just do what they're supposed to do and move on. And it's not that easy, right? For a lot of students.
It isn't. And I think, and this is not something you can like prescribe, like, you know, 30 minutes a day, be sure to talk to your child about their whatever. So I think that doesn't work. I think you have to, you know, quality time is often spontaneous. And so I think, so you can't necessarily structure it, but if you're lucky, you'll find a way to sort of encourage it. And so I have found oftentimes, strangely enough, like drive time is a very safe and comfortable way for kids, because they don't necessarily have to make eye contact with you, which can be intimidating, but you're in the car, there can be nothing else to do. Of course, you have to have like earbuds out and screens off and say like, I need you for the next 10 minutes and I want to ask you about blah, blah, blah. And then you can ask them about things at school or you can get updates. But to do that, you have to kind of commit to it and to be in tune. So if you're kind of coming in once a quarter, they're going to understand that you have a very superficial like take on their life. But if you're docking in with some frequency, you know, once or twice a day or after dinner, just talk for a few minutes and check in. They don't have to tell you everything, but you may establish or get to a way of normalizing updates and just checking in on headlines. And just that way you open the door to, if there is a concern, and to state this in some kind of repetitive way, like, hey, listen, if that was ever stressing you out, and or if you were in a bullying situation, I would actually really want to know about that. And I'm obviously not going to go crazy, but I think I'd want to think with you how we should address it so that you're not feeling stressed by this, or this is not getting in your way, or this is not getting you down. So I think it's kind of like a long ball kind of solution. It's not a one and done. It's a thing you have to make a part of your life.
And if you have any questions, like how to help my kid with ADHD or something, they can call their doctor and say, hey, what resources are out there? Right. I think people forget that. So I think that's really important.
Absolutely right.
And so we did a little poll before we had you on here, by the way. We asked we've got a whole database of a group of people that listen to us, and we asked them, and you're going to love this, what to ask a pediatrician.
The big three are usually eating, sleeping, and pooping, but keep going.
Okay. No, you won't believe this. This is hilarious. The first one is, how do I get my teenager to shower every day?
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's a tough one. And it usually is like, you know, not always, but typically like young boys or like you'd sort of just on the tween to younger teen side. You know, I think, you know, there's a couple things you can do, and you always want to start small. But I think the best way of changing any behavior, be it showering or, you know, good table etiquette is encouragement. So when you catch them doing something good, reasonable praise, like, hey, thank you. Like, you know, that's, I've asked you to do it. You did it. I appreciate that. That's awesome. Thank you very much. And then if you're in a generous mood or you see a couple of times of good responses, a modest reward, essentially like beyond praise, like something well done, not like a new car, but like, you know, like, hey, you know what? You've been kind of awesome this week. How about you pick where we go for dinner on Thursday night? Like, or you pick takeout for Friday, like something like modest, but something that will also give them a sense of recognition and value. That's where I would start. And I think, you know, shame, yelling, tend they they might be how you feel, but they don't necessarily affect changes in behavior in remotely the same way, and often can be counterproductive. And I think being a little concrete, you know, sort of saying like, listen, you know, if you can do this, I think you'll notice, you might notice some other benefits from doing this, that your skin may clear up, or maybe we just need you to think about other ways, you know, give them some choices. Like, all right, you don't want to shower at night, shower in the morning. That's fine. Or flip it, like shower the other way. But I think like once, and you don't necessarily have to shower every day to smell less. And lastly, you might also explore some things that might support them in doing less frequently, like using some of those like detergent powders or soap or shampoo powders that may be an alternative to dunking in the water. So starting small and baby steps with reinforcement can move you along.
Love it. The other one was, this was overwhelmingly the question, how do I get my child or my teen off their phone and not mad at me and they will talk to me?
They're going to be mad at you. It's kind of their job, right? Like your job is to be, their job is to test boundaries. Your job, much like when they were toddlers, they're just bigger, hairier, smellier toddlers. Now they are testing new limits while they explore their world and their independence and their new skills and knowledge, right? So yeah, that absolutely sets you all up for some conflict, and they're going to be mad with you, and that's okay. It's not fun, but I think like sticking to your guns and having reasonable rules and sticking to them and having consistency will be a good formula for success. Now, what does that mean in living? I think you might say like, okay, you know, like, listen, you can have, you know, it's open season phone time until like 7:30, and then there is no phone time. Phones go into like the parking lot from like 7:30 to 9. And then during that time, I have these expectations of you, et cetera. And then I think a big thing going into the school year is you may, as a household, and you have to make sure everyone agrees, including you and your partner, that there may be some rules of play around phones in rooms or phones at night, because those can be these big robbers of sleep, which can impact daytime mood, functioning, and the ability to get out for school in the morning.
So I have a great solution on that one. Okay. And then the third one, we had three that we took three. There was sure. Many more, but the third one was, I'm highly concerned about, and these were all teenagers. They said, I'm highly concerned about my teenager playing all of these shooting games for so many hours of the potential outcome. What's your thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot of controversy around this. I am not necessarily convinced that, these games like Call of Duty, for example, create violent individuals. I think there is a related discussion that can you become video game addicted? And the short answer is, yeah, maybe, or in a way, it's not the same thing as alcoholism or methamphetamine, but I think it can replace interest or motivation to do other activities which may be more functional. So when anything becomes dysfunctional, like you're spending all your time doing PS5 and you're not doing enough time on your homework or going outside, then that's maybe when you have to put some guardrails around when that availability is. And
yeah.
If you're finding that people can't, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're exactly right. I took a group of my son's friends who were in high school and I asked them, I said, do you think this has a long-term negative effect on individuals? And they were all like, no, not really. You know? And I said, well, I said, here's how I view it. I said, each one of you will respond to it differently, right? You may be able to handle it better than this person. You don't know what they're going to go through down the road. You don't know their temperament, you know, or whatever. So I always said, you know, if you're playing games with other kids like that, and you notice any changes, you know, just be aware. Now, are they going to remember that? I don't know. But I, you know, it is controversial, but I'm, you know, and here was the thing I was going to share. So to parents, this is what we did at midnight. We started turning our Wi-Fi off and our son comes running in the room, freaking out, going, I have called the phone company and the internet company and everybody else's is on in our neighborhood. And we were like, yeah, that's our new program. And so that it worked. And then that was the norm. He knew at like 1 o'clock it was gone. You know, and so, and that was when he was in high school. So, so that is great. But, first of all, I got to ask you something. What do you love about your job?
The kids, far and away, and the parents who come with them. I mean, they are a joy, and, you know, the stuff that comes out of their mouths, the successes of seeing kids who weren't supposed to walk, the kids who, achieve milestones that were, you know, the parents were told that would never happen is why we show up every day. Plus the and just sometimes the intellectual challenge and the honor of being able to be a medical educator to residents and medical students, like all those things, I think make it a very lovely job. The paperwork is a drag, and a lot of the stuff we talked about earlier about healthcare is not as much fun and not why people get out of bed in the morning, but you take the good with the bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I've got one last question for you, and it's a big one. Okay, you ready?
Sure.
All right. So when you get up in the morning and it's one of those days, you are just not focused, you're not there. It's one of those days, but you've got a long list of people. You've got a presentation to make. What is the name of the song or the artist or the genre that you listen to when you get in your car and you go to work to be prepared?
Sure. If I need a pick me up song or a song to kind of like bring me down at the end of a day, bring me down and kind of to earth, I should say, at the end of the day, it would absolutely be Joe Jackson's The Artist and Another World is the song.
Love it. Love it. Well, listen, I'm so just blessed to know you. I'm delighted that you came on our show today. I would love to have you back again because I could talk to you for hours and I know we could learn a lot, but thank you so much for being on our show. We graciously appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Refocus the Creative Office. If you haven't checked out our new designed academic calendars, you've got to check them out. Students are loving them. We've got them in bookstores all over and many retailers, but we've only got so many. So check them out at refocus.com. They were actually designed by the input from college students nationwide. And also, if you're looking for an annual calendar, those are coming out very soon. Email us at info@refocus.com and let us know that you want to be added to our mailing list. And we'll let you know so that when you can pre-order those annual calendars coming soon. But no matter what you're going through, don't forget to stop, take a moment, and refocus. Have a great week.